Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Ryan, I want to do this interview a little differently. Usually at this point, I will give you my first question and then you'll answer it for my audience. I want to, though, explain to my audience how this interview is going to work. We saw Election Day a week ago. We saw it come down. We saw the Empire State Building turn red. We saw the president come out the next day, a little nervous, but he was firm. Now we see a lot of different issues coming at us. I want to break this interview up into three pieces. I want to break it up where the first piece is, what was the conclusion of Election Day? Who won? Who lost? I want to go into the aftermath, where the president is, what Congress is doing before many of them leave office in 2 months. And then I want to go into your audience. I want to go into your article on what we missed this Election Day. So let's go through the first piece, the conclusion of Election Day 2014. What happened? We saw hours and hours, many networks analyzing different races at a time. At the end of the day, what was the conclusion of Election Day 2014?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think if you were watching any of the mainstream television networks, I think the conclusion was that the election was for the Democrats to lose. I think that they lost it, and I think that for anyone who was critical of the president or of Barack Obama or who were hoping for a Republican sweep, I think they got it. There are a lot of factors that play into an election like this, and it's not always easily conveyed, I think, in sound bites or by the mainstream media. I mean, there's a lot of money that goes into this. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into spinning and attack ads. And there's also a lot of institutional, malaise that also plays into how voters view Congress, how they turn out, who stays home on Election Day, who comes out on Election Day. And I think as a result of all those things, you saw a pretty blistering defeat for the Democrats the biggest sweep for Republicans since the end of World War II. And I think that's probably going to define politics for the next decade.
What does the president and the Republicans now need to do to redeem themselves, to show them that we can get things done and we can get the United States back on the right track?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's something that most Americans on both sides, independents, anyone from who has the right to vote in the country, and anybody who doesn't have the right to vote in the country would like to see happen. I don't think that it probably will. I think align myself with some of the analysis I see in the mainstream media, which is that I think there are too many institutional factors here that would prevent any kind of resolution. I think we're probably going to see the same gridlock, and I think it's going to be even more intense. I think it's going to be even more grinding in terms of its inability to move forward or to accomplish anything significant over the next 2 years of the Obama presidency. Because when it comes to this election, what we saw, really what we've seen over the past several years, and this is, I mean, even over the Bush presidency, we've seen, and actually since the Clinton presidency, we've seen the Democrats and the Republicans increasing their partisan tactics. They have, and on either side of these two organizations that have been around for 150 years, you see think tanks, you see grassroots groups, you see lots of money funneled into opposition groups and opposition research into these campaigns to pressure both sides into doing something that these groups all kind of want them to do. And what it's done ever since this really ratcheted up in 1994, when Newt Gingrich really led the Republicans to power in the first place, is it's created this, I would call it a constitutional crisis, because I don't think that, and it's not a typical crisis. It's not a civil war. It's not a president who is doing things in secret and gets caught by a major news publication like the Washington Post. It's a slow building constitutional crisis, and it's a crisis because it's not resolving itself. The elections that we're holding is not resolving it. And so, you know, when it comes to this question of whether or not, you know, anything can be resolved, I demur because I just don't think it will be. I think this is a slow building constitutional crisis in our country. I think it's, you know, it's difficult to say how to resolve it, but I don't think we're going to see anything new out of the next 2 years or even 4 years or 6 years or 8 years than what we've seen over the past two decades.
Right now we are speaking with Ryan Schuette. He is on my phone line. He is a writer at IVN.us, experienced journalist, columnist, and cartoonist covering international politics, foreign aid, the housing industry, and domestic politics. Also the founder of a nonprofit and limited liability. Last week, for many of you who listened on my program on election night, we had John Turbush on. He was an associate editor at The Week. And when we asked him, what do you think after election night? He said the same thing you said. He said, Congress still going to do nothing. We're still not going to get anything done. And Ryan, you mentioned the same thing just now. And I think that's a scary conclusion. It's scary that we can vote the whole country red. We could vote the whole country blue. And we can still say nothing is going to get done. Not because of one side, not because of the other side, because of both sides. But I want to get into the aftermath now. You just said the conclusion, scary one, by the way. The aftermath, the past few days, what have we been seeing from the president? Even though we know that they might not get anything done, what has the president and what has Congress been doing so far since Election Day?
I think the biggest issue that everyone sees coming is probably immigration. Now, I think it's important to remember that immigration, this was a huge issue over the summer. We had almost 70,000 kids, unaccompanied minors, fleeing poverty and violence, extreme gang-related violence in Central America. And they fled north through Mexico, often on dangerous journeys, surviving rape, surviving loss of limbs, surviving kidnappings and things of this sort. I've actually written a story for Al Jazeera about it. I'm writing another one shortly here, but they fled north. And you know, came through the borders and became a huge if you listen to mainstream media, it was apoplectic. I mean, there were people who were on the right and left. You know, the left was largely sympathetic, the right was largely, you know, against it, and they called for deportations. And in the midst of all this, I mean, it was a big issue during the summer, but then suddenly those numbers dropped off, and with it went a lot of the media attention. And when that media attention went, so did all the lawmakers and their calls and so forth. But now that the election is actually over, now we're going to return to it, because this is actually, most people don't know this, but according to the sources that I've spoken with, during January, February, and so forth, those are actually the peak months for migration flows in the United States. So now that's going to pick up, and the President Obama has said that he's going to look into some kind of executive action this next spring. You're going to see a pickup, and I think that what's going to happen is you're going to see a replay. You're going to see these two parties sizing each other down and standing up to each other over this immigration issue. And the only I'm almost with some certainty I can say that most people are thinking the White House is going to issue some kind of executive action, because there's just no chance for any kind of comprehensive reform package coming from the Congress that will get signed by the president. The House and Senate will likely come up with some kind of bill. They're going to want to be seen as proactive about this, but it's not going to be in any way, shape, or form something the president can sign on behalf of the Democratic Party or his own interests. So as a result, you're going to see that issue. It's going to cascade back down to the president. He's going to veto something more than likely, and then it's the whole issue is going to erupt on the political landscape again. And part of that, I should have touched on it earlier, but part of that is due to gerrymandering, due to partisan redistricting, and in which basically the House has become completely uncompetitive. I think the Washington Post said something like there were less than 30 seats in the House that were even competitive this election. So that means that most districts that had a Democrat or Republican, they were going to vote them in anyway. That's why most observers looked at the Senate and looked at the gubernatorial races and thought to themselves, well, those are the real prizes on Election Day. And they were, because the House is so uncompetitive. And that's, again, why you're seeing so much gridlock. And that's my predictions would be in the aftermath of all this, to get back to the original question.
Right now we are speaking with Ryan Schuette. He is a writer for IVN.us, experienced journalist, columnist, and cartoonist covering international politics, foreign aid, the housing industry, and domestic politics. Also the founder of a nonprofit and limited liability. So many questions that I could ask you, but I just don't have time. We have to get right into your article, and that is five things about the 2014 midterms you likely missed. Why did you write this piece, and can you give my audience a summary of the five different things we missed? I mean, you, like you said, we were so distracted by the bickering and the back and forth, the R's and the D's, but we missed some important things. Can you share with us what we missed?
Yeah, sure. I'd be glad to. So I think the article came from, so some background on me. I'm currently at American University, where I'm undertaking a Master of Arts in Journalism and Public Affairs. And so as part of that program, it's a great program. And as part of that program, they send us out with experienced reporters, and they allow us to report for publications like the Washington Post and NPR and things like that. And Al Jazeera, which I've been doing. So in going out in the field and speaking with voters, what I saw was that in Maryland, there was just a lot of frustration with the Obama administration. And it came from, I actually met a lot of diverse Republicans. I don't think typically fit the mold for that party. And I met Black and Japanese American Republican voters, and most Democrats that I encountered just they didn't necessarily say anything critical of the Obama administration, but they didn't praise it either. So that was part of it. Another part of it is, you know, every time we see an election season like this, it's always about, like, you saw the tower in New York turn red. It's always a horse race. This is always a horse race political game. It's always about gamesmanship. It's almost like, you know, you see these mainstream media anchors and talking heads on TV, and they chair this whole horse race coverage as though they were sportscasters. Well, when they do that, I think that they convey to the American public, I think, a false understanding of how the political system currently works. It's not, there's no real discussion about partisan redistricting, which, as I mentioned before, is responsible for keeping almost every seat in the House of Representatives completely uncompetitive, giving every incumbent like a 70-90% edge over their over any opponent from the other party. And then they also miss things like how much money. Well, typically they do cover the money in politics, but not to the same extent. There's a lot of dark money out there. There's a lot of campaigns that thanks to Citizens United Supreme Court decision are allowed to accept money they don't have to disclose, or that their super political action committees, quote unquote, don't have to necessarily disclose. So there's people, I think experts are talking about how there's even more money than what's being reported, which is about $3.67 billion that went into this past election cycle. That there's just a lot of institutional factors at play here. This is not just some kind of, voters get up and go to the polls and they vote these two parties in, and it's an equal advantage for both parties, because actually, as we saw in this last election, most Democrats stayed home. Most Democrats didn't turn in their ballots on time. Most Democrats just kind of turned the other way. And as a result, you had a minority of voters who were predominantly Republican, and this happens in every 6 year, pretty much, turn their party back into power. And I think when it comes to those institutional factors that I think keep people disinterested and at home, you know, it just comes right back down to this being, I think, a low bubbling constitutional crisis that people sense it. I think people are thinking about it. I don't think anyone has any solutions to it currently. I think most people are aware that the system is just not functioning anymore. It's not, I mean, in what sense can you call this a healthy democratic system where you have government shutdowns, where you have, just 2 years ago, or in 2013, the two parties were threatening through their own gamesmanship tactics to get the United States to default on its debts, which has not happened. Not really happened, not truly happened in about 200 years. And if that had happened, we would have had a downgrade on our credit, much as we had from Standard & Poor's back in 2012 or 2011. So you see these tactics. People are jaded by it, I think. People are frustrated with the system. I think people don't feel any ownership over the democratic system anymore. I think that's, you know, speaking about scary prospects, I think that's scary in a democracy where people would rather stay home and participate in other activities than go to the polls because they have no ownership. They go to the polls, you know, and I think that people, you know, they'll cast their ballots. They go to all the trouble to do this from either side, from either party, you know, if you're an independent, Republican, Democrat, whatever. And there is no result. There is no result. And a lot of it came from the article that I wrote. It's the money in politics. It's the gerrymandering. It's the dirty tactics on Capitol Hill that we regularly hear about. It's the crises like immigration that don't get addressed, that get kicked down the road. And I think that all of that contributes. And I don't think I mentioned this in the article, but I think it all contributes to a culture of malaise in which people just aren't interested in participating anymore.
Ryan Schuette, he is a writer at IVN.us. He also experienced journalist, columnist, and cartoonist covering international politics, foreign aid, the housing industry, and domestic politics. Also the founder of a nonprofit and limited liability. Ryan, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, and we hope we can speak to you again in the future.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I really enjoyed it. Thanks again.
Have a good one, Ryan.
You too. Thank you.